Now we're going to talk about something that we really haven't addressed, at least since I've been hosting this program, the Crusades. In fact, the Crusades have been used by many to justify the claims of Christianity as a domineering and intolerant religion. Seeing it as a war, we might be led to believe the same thing as Catholics. But what were the Crusades actually fought over? And what are some of the main myths about the Crusades? Joining us now is Steve Wiedenkopf to share the real story of the Crusades. Steve is a lecturer in church history at Christendom College Graduate School of Theology in Alexandria, Virginia. He has given numerous presentations and seminars in church history, marriage, and family life, as well as human sexuality and theology throughout the U.S. and Canada. Good morning, Steve. Welcome to Morning Air. Good to be with you today.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on the show, and glad to be here.
Absolutely. This is, I believe, a very interesting topic, the topic of the Crusades. And there's a lot of folks that have heard about the Crusades, but they really don't know a whole lot about it. Can you give us kind of an overview of what were the Crusades?
Yeah, you're exactly right, John. The Crusades is one of those historical events, right, that people have that has wide recognition. People will hear the word, they'll have a kind of a mental image of what they think the Crusades were. A lot of that's been shaped and formed by, you know, various media presentations, films or documentaries, what have you. But then there is very little serious understanding about what these actual events were, why people went on them, and those kinds of questions. So great topic. And just to give a brief overview, I mean, the Crusades really began, or the crusading movement, we really should say, began towards the end of the 11th century when Pope Blessed Urban II at a local council of Clermont in France calls for what later becomes known as the First Crusade. And what he asked for was warriors of Christendom to travel to the Holy Land and to liberate the city of Jerusalem, in particular the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem, from Islamic occupation. And the crusading movement really begins in this late 11th century because of a specific event, if you will. There was a group of people known as the Seljuk Turks who came down from the Mongolian steppe, and they come into what is today modern-day Turkey. At the time was a province of the Byzantine Empire known as Anatolia, and they win a series of big battles against the Byzantine Empire, and they begin to consolidate their holdings in what is, again, modern-day Turkey. And the Byzantine emperor is concerned about this. There's, you know, this military invasion, if you will. So he sends representatives to the West, to the Pope. The Pope at that time was Gregory VII, and asks him to send military aid to the East to help the Eastern Christians in this fight against this Islamic military invasion. So that's kind of the backdrop to why the Crusades began in the 11th century.
And so contrary to some people's misinformed opinions, it was not an aggressive attack on the part of Christianity. It was just the opposite. It was a defensive move on the part of Pope Urban II to try to liberate the Holy Land.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you hit on it. That's one of the major myths that people have about the Crusades today in the modern world, is that this was some kind of offensive, you know, European invasion of the Holy Land against, you know, peaceful Muslims who had been there since the 7th century, you know. And so, but that's not, when you look at the actual historical record, that's not exactly what had happened, right? There had been Christians, indigenous Christians, and you know, Jews living in the Holy Land since the initial Islamic invasion back in the 7th century. And there have been relative periods of peace between those peoples, and sometimes there were times of great violence. And when the Seljuks come into the territory here at the end of the 11th, they begin to harass the indigenous Christians. They begin to harass as well Christian pilgrims who are coming from Christendom, from Europe, to the Holy Land to visit the holy sites, right? That had been ongoing from Europe since the 4th century. And again, since the time of the initial Islamic invasion, there were periods of peace where Christian pilgrims were not harassed at all and left alone. There are no times when there was violence, and the violence begins to ratchet up here in the 11th century with the arrival of these new people. And so there needed to be a response, a defensive response. And that's what Pope Urban asked for, and that's how Christian warriors who participated in the Crusades, that's what they believed that they were doing. They were participating in a just war designed to protect indigenous Christians in the Holy Land, Christian pilgrims traveling, and to reconquer, liberate actually the territory, Christian territory, in the Holy Land in North Africa.
How bad was the persecution at the time of Catholic Christians? Because this was before the Reformation, so there was really still really East and Western Christians. There were no Protestant Christians at that point.
Yeah, that's true. And the persecution, as I mentioned, was at times could be very difficult. I mean, in the middle part of the 11th century, in 1065 or so, there was a very famous, well-known, at least in historical circles, of a group of German pilgrims who left from what is modern-day Germany to go to the Holy Land with their bishop. You know, estimates vary. This could have been anywhere from several thousand to 10,000 or so people, so it's a very large pilgrimage. Went to the Holy Land and they were attacked and were slaughtered by the Turks at the time in the Holy Land. So there was reports of that coming back to Europe. There were earlier in the century, in the 11th century, an Egyptian caliph by the name of Al-Hakim had destroyed the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, one of the original churches that had been built all the way back to the time of the 4th century with St. Helena and Constantine. He destroyed that church in the early part of the 11th century. News of that came back to Europe, and that was obviously met with great concern and anger, really. That church would later be rebuilt before the Crusaders arrived, and then the first Crusaders would add to the church as well to get the kind of current modern-day church that we have there now. There were various reports of at times, great persecution, and that really motivated many of these warriors to heed Pope Urban's call and to participate in this armed pilgrimage.
One thing that we know for sure is there's been a lot of myths that have come out of the Crusades. In fact, even in the last 100 years, there's been all kinds of tales that have been spun that are not based on reality, not based on what actually happened, but it's a kind of opinions of people that have come up with all kinds of different stories. In fact, one of my colleagues here at Relevant Radio, Patrick Madrid, wrote a fascinating book called Pope Fiction, and in it, he has a whole chapter dedicated to the role of the papacy, the vicar of Christ, and the Crusades. And one of those myths that he writes about was that the papacy started the bloodbath of the Crusades, and that the Pope's greed for the Holy Land drove them to order the massacre of millions of Jews and Muslims. Steve, this really is a myth.
Yeah, it is, exactly. And Patrick, that's a great book that he wrote years ago on the papacy. And I wrote a book on the Crusades specifically a few years ago called The Glory of the Crusades, where I walk through many of these different modern day myths that people have about the Crusades and encounter it with authentic history. And the myth that Patrick references there in his book is a fairly well-known myth in terms of it's been perpetuated and continues to be discussed, sadly, even after the September 11th attacks in November of 2001, former President Bill Clinton gave a speech at Georgetown University where he talked about trying to answer the question why, the United States was attacked by these Islamic terrorists. And he cited this particular event in Jerusalem right after the First Crusade, the so-called Massacre of Jerusalem, where thousands of Jews and Muslims in the holy city were supposedly massacred by the Crusaders to the point where there was blood running up to their knees. There was blood up to the bridle of their horses. I mean, there's various different accounts of how much blood was being spilled that day. And so even that was repeated. That myth was repeated in that context not that long ago, and you still hear that. And that's a myth that's rooted really in a misunderstanding of some of the chronicles that were written during the time of the Crusades and right after the Crusades to describe what happened in the Holy City in Jerusalem after the first Crusaders were able to liberate it. There definitely was a battle. There definitely was, people who were killed. There were non-combatants killed after the Crusade armies were able to get into the Holy City. That was very common at the time, frankly, for that type of siege warfare. If a city holds out against a besieging army, once the army gets into the city, it really is kind of a no-holds-barred kind of situation. Not to justify it, but that's how we can understand and explain it. But there was in no way, shape, or form, that amount of bloodshed that's usually levied against that particular event. again, Christian Chronicles at the time wrote in those terms, saying that we, you know, there were so many people that were killed in the city that it was, you know, blood that was running up to, you know, the bridle of the horses. But when you delve into that chronicle a little bit more and you look at those sources, that's really an allegory, and it's really more of a reference to various scriptural passages, especially in Revelation, that talk about God's judgment and God's wrath being placed upon unbelievers. And so that's what that commentary is rooted in, and what it was trying to, the story was trying to tell people back home of what had happened, that the Crusaders came in, they liberated the city, God was with them, his judgment was upon the unbelievers in the city, and so, you know, they were up to, you know, that's why they were able to conquer the city and liberate it, if you will. So it was allegorical, not meant to be taken literally.
We're speaking this morning with Steve Weidenkopf, lecturer in church history at Christendom College, also the author of The Glory of the Crusades. We're talking about the Crusades. Steve, should Catholics in this day and age feel in any way, shape, or form ashamed of the Crusades?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, there's a kind of a common response, I think, in many cases, right? That when we as Catholics are confronted by other people about the Crusades, we tend to kind of, you know, put our head down or say, oh yeah, those things shouldn't have happened or whatever. But I think that response is rooted in a lack of understanding of what the crusading movement was and why people went on the crusading movement or why they participated in the Crusades. And so I think it's very incumbent upon us, and that's what I really, this kind of the thesis of my book, is that we need to understand these events. They were an integral part of the life of the church for centuries. I mean, the crusading movement lasted from the 11th century all the way into the 17th century. So we're talking, you know, more than 500 plus years of involvement by the church, right? These were Catholic events. They were called by the Pope. Catholic warriors participated in them. There were great spiritual events. Frankly, the warriors who participated in them saw them as pilgrimages. They were armed pilgrimages. They were going specifically to liberate the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and other ancient Christian areas. And so, in many cases, we have accounts of how penitential the warriors participated in these events. How they saw this as a great opportunity, a spiritual opportunity. So I think there's many things we can learn from the people who participated in these events, and we need to fight through the myths that have been created about the Crusades in order to discredit our church and to attack her, really, to try to lessen her influence in the world. And we need to do that with authentic history, and we need to not be ashamed of our past history, good and bad.
We're speaking this morning with Steve Weidenkopf from Christendom College. He's a historian. We're talking about the Crusades. This is your opportunity, brothers and sisters, if you have any questions, if you ever wondered about the Crusades, anything you want to ask Steve, we do have some open lines, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. If you're a student of history and you're fascinated by this period of the Crusades, do jump into the conversation. We need to take a short break as we continue speaking with Steve Weidenkopf. Stay with us. We'll have much more on the other side. 888-914-9149. Welcome back to Morning Air. I'm John Morales. Thanks for being with us this morning as we continue our discussion on the Crusades with lecturer in church history at Christendom College, Steve Weidenkopf. He's also the author of The Glory of the Crusades, which is available on paperback or in paperback on Amazon. Steve, welcome back.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me on the show.
Steve, just the very title of your book, The Glory of the Crusades, makes you wonder, how can the Crusades be called the glorious?
Yeah, I get that question a lot, and a good question. So, you know, the reason why I titled the book that was there were two kind of meanings behind it. So one is taken from a quote, actually, from a Catholic historian, politician, an English Catholic historian, politician, Hilaire Belloc, in the early 20th century, when he was writing at the time when it was after the First World War and the European powers were establishing colonial enterprises in what is now, you know, the Holy Land, Syria, Jordan, Jerusalem, Israel, modern-day Israel. And he was writing about that these kind of new colonial enterprises in the 20th century, early 20th century. And he said, you know, we're returning to this area, this land of where the Crusaders had once been centuries before. He said, but we're returning to that territory, you know, without the glory of the previous Crusaders. And what he meant by that was, and he went on in detail to describe that, but what he meant by that was the spiritual underpinnings behind the crusading movement. He was criticizing his own government and the European powers at the time, that they had been so thoroughly secularized that and many of the people of the time were in those European countries were talking about these colonial endeavors. They were using crusading imagery to describe them, and Belloc was very critical of that, saying, you know, yeah, okay, fine, you can use crusader imagery to discuss what we're doing here in the modern world, but our endeavors here are not girded by as faith, not girded by the Catholic faith. And he said that, you know, the warriors who had come centuries before to this territory had come because of their faith. And that was the glory of what they were participating in, that it was a spiritual movement, really. So that was one reason why I chose that title for the book. The other was, if you understand what the word, the Hebrew word glory in the Old Testament is kavod. And what that word means really is this understanding of God's, the importance of God, the weightiness of God, right? That God should be central in our lives. And so the title of my book was called to, was really kind of a clarion call to Catholics to understand these events, understand the importance of these events in the life of the church and in the life of her history, and the weightiness of them, and to know them authentically in order so that we can defend our story and our history from people who attack it in the modern world because they don't like the church and they don't like the gospel message. And we need to be armed with authentic truth in order to refute those myths that come about, especially of these historical events.
Absolutely. 888-914-9149. In fact, Joanne has a question for you, Steve. Joanne is joining us from Branchville, New Jersey. Welcome, Joanne. You're on with Steve Weidenkopf.
Good morning, gentlemen. I recently attended a installation and offices for the Austrian Knights of the Holy Sepulchre at Petrus Cathedral with Cardinal Dolan presiding, and it was a very moving experience. My brother-in-law went up a notch. But I was curious, the men are in white long capes with the Jerusalem cross and different designations on their apparel and a black beret, and women are dressed all in black. It's almost, you know, I don't know if it's morning. I was just wondering if there's some kind of meaning to that. And I have to say, I was not familiar with the Knights of the Holy Sepulchre. But what an amazing group of people doing great things. But anyway, what is the significance of the women in black? Or is there a significance?
Yeah, Joanne, thanks so much for your question. And it's a question kind of near and dear to my heart, because actually I am a Knight of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem myself. So I'm very, very familiar with the organization. And what the organization is, for those who don't know, is it's a church-affiliated order that has both lay people and clerics, priests, as members. And we are focused mostly on providing charitable efforts and initiatives to Christians in the Holy Land in the modern day. So we are really focused on ensuring that there is a Christian presence that remains in the Holy Land in these various countries, where we've seen, sadly, especially in the 20th century, a huge movement and migration of peoples away, Christians out of the Holy Land. And so we want to ensure that there is a presence of Christians in the birthplace of Christ, in particular for centuries to come. So we do a lot of charitable work and things like that there. And as you mentioned, there's this installation ceremony when knights and dames are initiated into the order. And I don't know exactly why black is chosen for the women to wear, maybe just in contrast to the white cape that the knights receive. But That is the apparel of the order, a white cape, as you mentioned, for the men, and the black beret, and then a black mantilla for the dames. So That's the order, but it grew out of the history of that briefly. It grows out of the liberation of the Holy City of Jerusalem after the First Crusade in the summer of 1099. There's a guard that's established by Godfrey de Bouillon, who was one of the military commanders of the First Crusade. He establishes a military guard of the tomb of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and these were knights. And so it's from that initial guard, the military guard at the tomb, that the order grows out. It develops and changes over time, eventually reorganized in the 19th century and focused more, obviously, on charitable endeavors than any kind of military endeavor today.
Thanks so much, Joanne. I hope that helps. You came to the right place. Steve, here in this day and age, can you give us a perspective on where we're at? What is the current state of affairs? What can we learn from history, from the Crusades, that applies to today for Catholics and other Christians?
Yeah, well, I think what we can learn definitely is just to understand the real story of the Crusades and know why people participated in them, and to fight through some of these major myths that exist about the Crusades. And in particular, one of the major myths is that people participated because they were motivated by greed, by money and by booty, plunder, land, these kinds of things. This is even a myth that I was taught as an undergrad. And when you pull back the layer on that myth and begin to look at in more detail why people went, and they left us records as to why they went, you begin to see that there was a deep and abiding faith of these warriors. And not just the warriors, but there were non-combatants who went too, men, women, young adults went on the Crusades. And they were, mostly motivated by their faith, right? Participating in the Crusade, one could receive a plenary indulgence, which was a big deal back in the day, still a big deal. But spiritually speaking, for people of the Middle Ages, they were very much rooted in their faith, and the faith was integral to their entire life. And so to receive something that great of a spiritual privilege to participate in an armed pilgrimage was something that really motivated them. Now, it's not to say that everyone who participated in the Crusades was a saint, or that there weren't things that occurred on the Crusades throughout the movement that is something that weren't virtuous and good. That's true. There were negative events and people acting poorly and examples of horrible things happening, as is the case sadly with pretty much every historical event in the world. But so we need to fight through that, if you will, and understand those things and provide the proper context to them. But I think modern day Catholics can learn the most from the people who went, right? Sometimes we tend to see history as just these events and not focus on the fact that there were individual people who went on these events. And there are many things that we can learn from them. And I think from the people who participated in the crusading movement, we can really understand their deep and abiding faith and how integral it was to their daily life.
And again, very quickly, your book, The Glory of the Crusades, in paperback, came out a few years back. It is still available on Amazon.
It is, absolutely. It's published by Catholic Answers Press. You can also get it on their website, which is just shop.catholic.com.
Excellent. Well, we just scratched the surface, but I really appreciate your perspective and your insights on the Crusades. Steve, thanks so much for being with us this morning here on Morning Air.
Yeah, thank you, John, for having me. Appreciate it. God bless.
Many blessings to you. Steve Weidenkopf, a lecturer in church history at Christendom College, Graduate School of Theology, and the author of The Glory of the Crusades.